everyone. I'm Arlene Dickinson. Thanks for joining me on my podcast.
It's no secret that small business is a big deal for TELUS. Earlier this year, TELUS helped make things better for small businesses through their pledge to stand with owners. In continuing their support for owners across Canada, they are excited to introduce the Owner's Advantage Plan, an exclusive mobility plan tailored to help business owners stay connected to their family, business, and community. The Owner's Advantage Plan offers a wide variety of benefits designed to provide greater value and more flexibility than ever before, including yearly device upgrades, endless data, same-day device repair, and access to on-demand virtual healthcare, all on the world's fastest mobile network in the world. Visit telus.com/ownersadvantage.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Reinvention. Today, Arlene chats with Tamara Lovett, the head of mindfulness at Calm, an app for meditation and better sleep. If you have the Calm app, you may recognize Tamara by her tranquil voice and comforting tone. Every day, millions of people around the world are relaxed by Tamara's words, reminding them to take deep breaths and helping to reduce stress or anxiety, feelings that have become very familiar during the pandemic. Stress and anxiety are no strangers for Tamara either. Her childhood was laced with trauma, and as she progressed in life, her career choices only added to that stress. Pursuing a career in acting and music, Tamara was faced with challenges that many in the industry do. The combination of high competition and low pay resulted in being in constant danger of eviction. While the support of her friends motivated her to continue, learning meditation at a young age, along with everything she learned during her many careers, turned out to be the key to her long-term reinvention.
So I am here today on this podcast talking to Tamara Lovett. Hello, Tamara.
Hello. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
It's great to see you and see you in person. I feel like I know you so well. I mean, in fact, I listened to your voice just last night.
Nice. Yeah, it's a funny thing. I receive so many messages from people who share that they feel a strong connection with me and feel like they know me. People share that they view me as being like their best friend, and they've never met me and they've never seen me. So it's often an interesting experience for people when they meet me in person.
Yeah. So to everybody who's listening into this podcast, this is Tamara Lovett, and we're seeing the face behind the voice, or the voice in front of the face in this case. I'm not sure how you would characterize it, but Tamara, you might, if you have the Calm app, you have very, very likely heard Tamara's soothing voice talk to you and help calm you down and help ease anxiety. And she is absolutely a fabulous person. And I'm so excited to talk to you, Tamara, because you've made such a difference in my life. And it is interesting for you to say, you know, people talk to you and say, oh, you know, I feel like I know you and you're important to me, et cetera. But you really have changed the dialogue around anxiety and around calmness and around the need to meditate. I mean, you've really been at the forefront of changing and reinventing the whole kind of potential stigma there was around needing to meditate or any of those things. So maybe if you don't mind sharing a little bit of your journey, because it's pretty fascinating. And I think people would be fascinated to hear kind of how you got where you are as the head. What the title is, the chief.
Is it head of mindfulness?
Head of mindfulness. Yeah. Head of mindfulness. I was going to say, I knew it was like a. It was like I thought I'd like to be the head of mindfulness. Anyway, at the head of mindfulness at Calm. Yeah. So maybe you can tell us how you got there.
Yeah, that's a really big question. I'm not too sure exactly where to start.
Start with when you started to determine kind of when you yourself needed to focus on meditation.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So I guess, you know, my first introduction to meditation was in university. In first year university, I took a meditation course, but it was Christian meditation, which didn't really appeal to me. Yeah. And so I wasn't really sure if meditation was for me after that course. I left it for a little while. And then in my early 20s, I came back to it. And I was, you know, I've always been a searcher and a questioner. I've always had really big emotions. I think, you know, as a creative person, I feel like my emotions, I feel like I'm very sensitive and my emotions are often very intense. But also I lived with trauma. And so there was a lot that I was dealing with personally and emotionally. So I was dealing with depression, like through my childhood into my early adulthood, anxiety. I suffered from an eating disorder. I think those were the main things. I also struggled with insomnia from the time I was a child. So there was a lot internally that I was that I was kind of fighting against, and I was searching for understanding and peace in my life. And I was living with an immense amount of anger too. So, well, you know, I think that people who grow up in, you know, chronic, serious emotional and physical abusive homes grow up with a feeling of strong anger or even rage because you're not living in an environment that you have any control over. And there's so much fear. So that's kind of what I came into the world with. And meditation was something that, you know, I'd heard about. And then I came back to it in my early 20s with the understanding that it was a place that I was going to be able to get my emotions under control and find some peace in my life. So I started going from meditation center to meditation center. There were not many. There were only a few because this was, you know, this was like 25 years ago. And meditation wasn't really a thing. Like there were not many people that were meditating. So I read books. I tried to teach myself meditation and visited as many different teachers as I could, but it was really limited. So it was a very slow process for me. There weren't apps. There weren't nearly as many centers available or different styles of teaching. So I ended up going to an eating disorders center called Sheena's Place in Toronto. They offered an 8-week course on mindfulness meditation. And I remember that being an experience that really seeded my desire to learn more about the practice. And then I went to a center in Toronto, the Chandrakirti Buddhist Mahayana Meditation Center. I went there for years and, you know, just kind of moved around because I was trying to find the type of practice. A lot of people are under the belief that, you know, you either like meditation or you don't like meditation, or you're a good meditator or a bad meditator. But it's like anything. It's finding the right teacher. It's finding the right practice. It's entering it at the right time. It's doing it in a way that's going to work in your life. So there's so many different factors. So I always encourage people, if your first entry into meditation doesn't feel like a fit, keep looking, keep going, because it's often just about finding the right fit. Once I got going, I found that, you know, meditation supported me in immense ways in my life. It's, I think, you know, one of the ways that people talk about meditation is it's the art of living. And I really believe that, you know, it's taught me how to find peace and space and stability in a world that has no stability. It's taught me compassion and patience and non-judgment. When I didn't come from an environment that offered me that or taught me that. And it's taught me about developing equanimity which is really the practice of learning how to be stable in really rocky times, so that you can be less reactive to external situations that normally you would blow up around. And that's, you know, that's still something I'm working on. And a lot, I mean, all these things are things I'm working on. It's a lifelong practice.
And I love, I mean, equanimity is something we could all use right now, because we're all feeling this pent up kind of, sometimes I feel anger, sometimes I feel anxiety, sometimes it just, this, the whole pandemic has created this real difficult ability. I'd say it has affected my ability, at least, to really manage through the highs and lows. And so you do turn to whether it's the Calm app or meditation. I want to share a story with you, because as you share your story of how you got here, it makes me think of my dad. My dad has passed away, you know, a number of years ago from cancer. My father was an educator. He had a PhD in education, and he really believed in lifelong learning. And he was very much like you, which was life is, you know, we're working on ourselves all the time. And when he got sick, he did what any person with a, you know, high degree of an aptitude for learning would do. He started to research his illness and, you know, started to look at all of the alternative treatments that there were out there, whether it was magnetic treatments or whether it was, going to the Reiki Institute, or whether it was going down to and learning about, having a macrobiotic diet, or, you know, he was into all of these alternative things, which at the time now, about 20, 25 years ago, as you're talking about, it was unheard of. Like everybody was looking at him like, Dad, you just go to the doctor. The doctor will cure everything. And yeah. He meditated. And he meditated to help him through his illness. And I remember him saying to me, Arlene, you really need to meditate. You live such a busy life. You need to figure out how to just find that time for you. And he said, I'm going to give you some tapes. And, you know, I listened to one and I thought, oh, this is so not me. You know, like, I'm not going to take the time to do that. And I kind of poo-pooed it and said, ugh, whatever, Dad, you know, if it works for you, that's awesome. But not my jam. And now 25 years later, I go, wow, he really did understand how important it was to be in touch with what was going on around you in the world and not letting it interfere with what was happening inside of you at the same time, right? And I'm not sure if that's a good description of meditation, but it feels like it's being aware of and not letting the exterior kind of disrupt the interior. Is that a fair way to put it?
Well, you know, I think meditation means different things to many people. And I think we use meditation in different ways. I don't know if it's not... definitely there is an element of it not disrupting, because it keeps us more stable so that we're able to deal with, you know, something like cancer, which can just crush us. It can give us a stability so that we can actually live in the present and take one thing at a time rather than being overwhelmed by a million things. But it also gives us the ability to just have more insight into what's happening in our experience. And it's often with that insight that we we're able to respond to our inner life and our outer life in a more skillful and appropriate way, right? So it's kind of a combination of both things. We need the understanding and we also need the stability. We need both things together. So I think it's so beautiful that you're father found meditation on his own and that it supported him through that. My father died of cancer as well. And it's a harsh experience.
It's so harsh, you know, and it's one of those things that you know, I mean, I can tell you that I had a bit of a health scare myself, which haven't talked about to anybody, you know, so it's funny that I'm going to talk about it on a podcast, but had a health scare myself, just over a year ago now, probably a year and a half ago. And at that moment in time when it happened, all you can think about is, you know what, I'm not ready for this. Like, this isn't, and so you start to think about who matters to you, what you want from the rest of your life. And you start to realize that it is in the moment. It is in now that you have to live. And this is a very difficult thing for people to do, because we're always thinking about, oh, I'll get to that at some point, or I've got lots of time to do those things, or, you know, and luckily my health improved. But I can imagine that when you're living with things that are terminal, or that you're dealing with things that aren't the end of your life as it comes, that you have to really have a reckoning about that moment in time, and thinking about, did I live every moment the way I should have? Is that how you feel, or how do you?
Absolutely. There's so much wisdom in teachings around death. Like, this is actually a really big practice in meditation, you know, contemplating death and contemplating our mortality and our ability to really appreciate this moment. I think, you know, a lot of us go through life just, you know, feeling invincible, and we don't often really focus on the fact that we're only here for a short period of time. And so as you were questioning, what is it that I want to be doing with my time? Who do I want to be spending my time with? You know, I actually have been going through a health scare as well. And it definitely made me start questioning those things more, and it impacted some of the choices that I've been making over the last year. You know, I really want to be doing the things that I feel I'm here to do, and that are going to give me the most joy, and that are going to be most meaningful for me. So it's actually a real, I mean, we hear so often about how near-death experiences wake people up, and they start living in a very different way. It's very powerful.
You know? I think what ends up happening is you start to go, and even if you don't believe in a life hereafter, or even if you think that, you know, if you're agnostic or what, you know, whatever your religious belief is, it doesn't change the fact that you have this moment here. And so you shouldn't be thinking about, well, when I get there, things are going to be better. You should be thinking about, what can I do that's going to make my life better while I'm here? Because clearly you have a reason for being here, whatever that is. And I think we get, one of the things I love about what you do with Calm and what the app is doing for people is it's teaching us to listen to ourselves and to take more control, I think, over, you know, thinking about what's next, but thinking about what's now. I think it's your gently back to sleep one that you do. Is it gently back to sleep?
Yeah.
And you talk in that, you talk about just letting things, you know, all the things that go through your mind, like be like clouds that are passing by you. And you go, oh yeah, I can let that go. I don't need to think about what I'm going to do tomorrow. I don't need to think about what's happening next week. I just need to go to, you know, just relax right now. And these are hard things for people to do. You say that you came from trauma in your childhood and that kind of led you here. Do you feel like this is, has it helped kind of, you never solved trauma in your childhood, but do you think it's kind of helped you come to peace with what led you here? Like,
I think that it's been a big part of my healing. You know, I feel like meditation has been a huge supportive healing for me in many different ways. You know, with my eating disorder, I feel like mindfulness helped resolve that issue in my life more than anything else. And I explored quite a few, you know, modalities and different types of, you know, I was in the hospital for a little while. So it was a 10-year period that I had an eating disorder. And I really believe that mindfulness helped heal me more than anything else. In terms of my issues with trauma, I feel like, you know, for a long time, for so much in my life, I was focused on survival. And it's really, you know, prior to Calm, I was working as, you know, a creative entrepreneur. And, you know, my career started off as a musician, and I did some acting. Music was my first love, though. As we all know, that's a really difficult career to pursue. And there were also some spiritual things that were going on with me, and my looking at my identity and really questioning who am I if I'm not an artist, and wanting to explore that. And, you know, as my practice grew, as my mindfulness practice grew, I became more interested in the who am I? And so there was a lot that my meditation path, there's a lot of ways that my meditation path impacted, you know, my career and my personal life and really everything. But, now I'm forgetting the question.
I was asking whether or not, you know, you feel like this, has helped.
Right. Yes. Thank you. Yeah. So for a long time, I was struggling in my life and I was looking for that space where I could actually relax and feel like everything is going to be okay. And as I got older, there was an urgency, right? The urgency grows as we're older because our opportunities shrink. And so I was just trying to figure out how to make my life work in a way that felt meaningful. And after being an artist, I, you know, created a few little businesses and I was working. I created a production company where I was focusing on bringing together my two biggest passions, which were meditation and mindfulness. And so I was focusing on creating properties, entertainment properties that kind of blended those two things. And it was a lot of, you know, the entertainment industry is, it's beautiful and harsh, and there's a lot of almosts, and you spend years doing something and you've got all this interest and then it falls apart. And so, you know, to answer the question, my life, you know, until Calm, this is my seventh year with Calm. Before Calm, I'd never really had financial stability. I was always worrying about how am I going to be okay in the world? And when you are, you know, when you're focusing on your survival needs, it's actually really hard to focus on deep healing. And so I actually feel like what meditation did is it kept me in a place where I could stabilize myself. It helped deepen compassion and gentleness for myself. And, you know, as an A-type personality perfectionist, it really helped me, you know, just create more tenderness for myself. All of those things have been so important for my healing. It also, you know, loving kindness helps create forgiveness as well. So there have been, you know, there has been some element of forgiveness in my life. So all of these things have been supportive. I've gone on many retreats. Usually retreats are the fastest way to really deepen your practice. And, but then often, you know, I'll come back into real life and I'm still living with a lot of, the deep-seated trauma that, like, you know, trauma gets stuck in your body. And so, and for people who live with trauma for many, many years, it's actually referred to as CPTSD. So that's what I live with. And so absolutely mindfulness has been a part of my healing, a really significant part of my healing. But it hasn't healed me. And that there's still a lot of work to be done. So, you know, I feel like COVID isn't really the time to be focusing on deep therapy because there's so much going on. But I do feel like now I am, I'm planning to be focusing on that. I'm in many ways in a better place than I've ever been in my life. So I feel like I'm wanting to enter that as kind of a new phase. So yeah, it's kind of, you know, meditation, I feel like it is medicine, but I don't feel like it's the only medicine. And I feel like it's sometimes a part of many medicines.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, that was actually my dad's philosophy as well, that know, he used to say it was part modern medicine, it was part ancient medicine, it was part, you know, it was part indigenous healing, it was part all of these things. He was saying, like, there's no one thing, it's many things that, you know, you find that work for you. And I actually really appreciate how one of the things that I've learned is that by being vulnerable, we actually help ourselves heal. You know, people always think it's, you know, how did you admit that, you know, publicly? And I'll go, because it is who I am. And, you know, I found that when I say it out loud, mm-hmm. that the fear goes away of having to admit that I had challenges anywhere and, you know, and struggled with things. I love that you're so open about it. Have you always been able to talk about it so openly, or is that also part of your healing, is to be able to say, you know, this is what I deal with?
Yeah, I think it's both. I mean, in my, you know, part of why I was drawn to the arts and, you know, music is because it allowed me a space where I could express myself. And, you know, in my home growing up, there was no room for expression. So that was a really, that, you know, music has been a really big part of my healing. And I think that, you know, there was actually this time, and this was about 20 years ago, where I developed my first website. And I always have had to do everything on my own because I was never in a position where I could hire people to do things. So I was developing this website. And once it was coming, you know, once I'd written the copy, I sent it over to my sister. My older sister is a psychologist, and she's always been the one that I've sent everything to proofread my copy. So she read it. And basically it was, you know, it was a website where I was introducing myself and I was talking about my path on meditation and how it's helped me. And, you know, it was focusing on, you know, generally when we create a website, we want to showcase the best version of ourselves. And so she read it and she said, "It sounds great, but it doesn't sound like you." Because you experience, you know, at that time I was struggling with depression. At that time I was struggling with anxiety. And she said, "I'm going to send you a book that I want you to read." And she sent me a book by Anne Lamott. Are you familiar with Anne Lamott?
Oh, I'm good.
Okay. So I love Anne Lamott. She mixes this deep wisdom with deep humor, and she's so honest about her experience. And I read it and I just realized how freeing it is to actually just be who you are and be able to share those, you know, the dark parts of you and the parts of you that are struggling, because it gives you permission to be human. And so I changed the copy. And at that point, it was very, you know, it became very clear to me that I never wanted to present as having all the answers. I never wanted to present as being perfect. And I do think that a lot of people assume that meditation instructors and meditators have it all together, that they are always calm, that they never experience anxiety, that they never have any, you know, any challenges or anger. And I do think now more there's more teachers that are coming out and sharing their story in a more authentic way. But to me, it's always been really important. And I had that conversation right away when I joined Calm, and I said, I'm not going to present as somebody who has all the answers. And so, and they, you know, Calm has always been, you know, supportive of that. So yeah, I feel like it also you know, destigmatizes a lot of these issues that we experience as humans. And I know that many people have emailed me and thanked me for sharing different parts of my struggles in the stories and in the teachings that I share. So I, you know, I'm grateful that I never had to pretend that I was anything other than what I am. And I think that's, you know, I wish that for everyone.
I mean, amen to all of that, because, you know, you say that people expect that from a meditation teacher or mindfulness teacher, people expect that from a dragon too. They expect you to be strong all the time and never have, you know, you, how can you say you have anxiety? How can you just, you know, say that? I go, because I do. You know, like, and so if I do, others do. And if I'm helping one other person go, you know what, there's nothing wrong with me. I'm not broken simply because I'm human. Then I think you have to be less stoic and less perfect, as you said. And who, anyone who presents as perfect is generally farthest from it. You know, I mean, we all are far from it. Right. And as you said, don't judge, you know, you don't know what people are going through. You don't know what their lives are about. So I love what you're saying. Now, how did you come across in that path? So a couple of things I have to say, you're beautiful. You are absolutely beautiful. I hadn't seen a picture of you. And so, you know, I only knew you from your voice and, you know, our exchanges on Twitter, which I really enjoyed. And, but I didn't really know what you look like, and you're just absolutely beautiful. And I don't mean that in the traditional, oh, you know, you're defined by your beauty, but it is your inner beauty that shows, Tamara. You actually have this wonderful glow about you that actually comes. I mean, you're beautiful physically, yes, but you also have this glow that comes out as well. And I wonder if that's from, you know, all of this work you've done and from, you know, but certainly I can understand that acting would have been a career for you. Voice talent that you did and all the websites and all the businesses you created as an entrepreneur, all of that stuff that you were doing suddenly led you to calm. How did you go from somebody who, and I mentioned your beauty because it would have been easy to be trapped by the commercialization of that, to be trapped by acting or be trapped by not, but that's a, that sounded judgmental. I don't mean that actors are trapped, but to say that was the route you were going to take. How did you go from that? No, it's about my mind.
I mean, I was never really that passionate about acting. I went to an art school and I was interested in music and dance and drama, but drama seemed the most fun. And so that's why I chose theater. And then as I grew older, you know, a lot of my friends got agents and it just seemed like it was a good path for me in order to also pursue music. So I never really felt incredibly passionate about acting. And you know, I remember, you know, being in my trailer once. I was on a Michael Douglas movie, and you know, when you're in a trailer, you know, all of this, you know, people are coming to you and they're getting you things and they're doing your hair, and it's like there really was a sense of wow, I can really see how people can lose themselves in this and start to identify who they are with success. And it felt very, I didn't feel like I would slip into it, but I felt very aware of it. And I also felt like with acting, it didn't enable me to creatively express in the way that I need to. I need to write my own material. I need to say what I need to say. So it wasn't hard for me to leave acting. Music, that's a whole other story. That was the most painful thing really that I ever did, leaving music. And it was one of the biggest regrets that I ever had. But yeah, that's a whole other story. But what happened was after I continued down the path and explored entrepreneurship, this was about, I guess, seven years ago. I was focusing on a book. I was writing a book and I really believed in it and I really wanted to have the time for it. I asked my father for money, to lend me money. And he said no. And then another friend of mine offered me the money. So I was living off of this money. That was my income. I'd stopped teaching. I was teaching music and I was doing different things. I basically ran out of money almost at the same time as I was evicted from my home. They were selling the home that I'd lived in for 11 years when my rent was really low. So everything at once was a really big jolt to my system. And, you know, it was one of the hardest times I ever went through. And it's also one of the biggest blessings in my life because I was able to sustain so much to pursue meaning and to pursue my path. I was willing to, you know, I was willing to deal with poverty. I was willing to deal with like everything that comes with the struggle of the artist. But I got to a point where I couldn't anymore. And I had to find a new place to live. And I realized I have to change my life. So I fell into a significant depression and like couldn't even get out of bed. And my family was saying, you know, just go get any job. Find a way to land on your feet. And then maybe we'll consider, maybe you'll go back to school and, you know, explore all the different options or, you know, go work at a hotel. And I just felt like I've fought for my whole life. Like I was in my, you know, in my early 40s. It's like, I fought so hard and then to just give it up now, it was so devastating to me. And not that there's anything wrong with, you know, it's amazing, you know, when I hear about people that go back to school in, you know, when they're older or, you know, working at any kind of job is, you know, there's so much value in all jobs, but I'd sacrificed so much. It was, it was impossible for me to accept that that would be my next step, but I was so weak. I couldn't figure out, you know, what else to do. So my best friend, who you know, Chris Advinson.
Yes, I do know Chris, and I was going to bring that up. I love that. I didn't know he was your best friend, but of course.
He's one of my absolute best and dearest friends. Okay. I've known him now for over 10 years. I think that I met him, I think it was right after he worked for you.
Yeah, he was so talented. And he is so talented.
He is, and he's with Calm Now as well.
Yeah, I know that. I know Chris.
Yeah.
So he was your best friend.
Yeah. So he said to me, we're going to use this to find your dream job. And I didn't know how I was going to do it because my resume, I mean, it was so discursive, you know, music and acting. And, you know, I wrote a kid's book. I self-published a kid's book. I'd started this production company and I created videos and like a little short film and different things, but there wasn't really anything that demonstrated success. And I definitely had all the tools to be, to work for a startup. And that's what he understood that. He said to me, you have everything that you need to be successful in an environment like that. But I didn't believe him. Because I didn't come from that world. So anyhow, we put together a resume and there were two companies that I actually sent it off to. We were very, very, we did some research. He's the one who told me about Calm. He listened to Jason Calacanis he's a startup guy and he had a podcast. That's how Chris learned about it. And so I sent off this resume to California, not thinking that I would hear back from them. Because, you know, why would they respond to little me in Toronto? And Alex Chu, who started Calm, responded to me. It was either later that afternoon or the next day. And he asked for an interview. And so it actually happened very quickly. I had the interview. I was terrified. Alex was absolutely lovely though. And what I didn't know, and I only found out when he flew me down to San Francisco, and it was kind of like a little Cinderella story, was that they'd been looking for years for someone like me with all of my skill sets, who had the, you know, the entrepreneurship background, who was a long-term meditator, who was able to relay teachings in a way that was accessible, who was a storyteller, who had voiceover experience. So it was all of these kind of obscure skill sets that I built in my life all fit for this role. So yeah, it was really, it was perfect timing. It was divine timing, really.
This whole podcast is about reinvention. And, you know, I think about your journey has been nothing but a reinvention of kind of how you feel and how you deal with, you know, life and how you've overcome kind of the things that you've experienced. But I also really believe that it is when something, you know, major happens in our life. It's kind of generally when I always say, you know, it's a divorce or a death in the family or a loss of a job, or like you said, you know, when you just feel like you had nowhere to go and you were feeling broken and lost, that's when, you know, a friend steps in and says, but there's so much more here that you can't see, and opens up the opportunity. And because you don't have another door to walk through, you walk through the door of opportunity that you couldn't see yourself. And I think that's kind of happens so often, where we get ourselves in these, what we think are just corners, and we can't get out of them. And if we just allow the universe to, you know, kind of unfold, there is always going to be a door that opens for us if we are willing to walk through that door. And I think you had the courage to say, I'm going to let Chris guide me, and I'm going to send out a resume, and I'm going to take an interview, you know, and I love that story. And look what it's done. It has to have changed your life so much. Like, can you imagine, could you see yourself now 10 years ago?
Oh God, not at all. I mean, if I could go back in time and say one thing to myself 10 years ago, it would be, it's going to be okay. So that I could just, sorry?
I say that exact
same. Yeah.
So what would you tell yourself? It's going to be all right. Yeah. It's going to be
okay. Yeah. And it's not that it's perfect. There's still, you know, there's still challenges that I have, that I face in my life. But, I couldn't, for so much of my life, it was just me feeling like I was banging on doors. And, you know, I don't know that, you know, like a lot of people will share advice, like, you know, if you just keep going, everything will work out. And there's a lot of simplistic kind of brush offs that I think people give because they're hopeful, and because also they want people to have to find endurance in their suffering. But really, my reality was that no, it's not going to work out. Like, I learned in my life, it's not going to work out. And I really believed that after a while, even though somehow I had this inner resilience to just keep going year after year. I honestly, I don't even know how I did it. But I do. When I hear about people who are going through periods where their life falls apart, I too look at those times as being full of opportunity. Because I do think it's when things fall apart that we have the opportunity to put the pieces back together differently and try something new. So, yeah.
Well, and you make a really fair point that it isn't as simple as saying, well, when you're in a corner, you know, everything's going to be okay, because it does require you, you know, standing up and taking that step out of the corner. And that's hard work. That requires a resilience and a persistence. And sometimes when you're depressed, you know, I've had depression as well. When you're depressed or when you're struggling, that could be the hardest step you can imagine. It can be harder than anything you'll ever do. And that's when you definitely need to reach out and get the help that you can get, because it can be, it is not always work you can do on your own. And in fact, it's often mm-hmm. work on your own. You do need help to get there. And that's, you know, maybe coming full circle when I think about reinvention, and I think about, you know, this year was, I've had panic attacks my whole life, you know, like nighttime attacks. And this year was the first year in my life. I mean, I'm 64 years old. And if somebody said to me that I was going to have anxiety through the day, I would have gone, no, I'm not that. I'm not an anxious person. I'm not going to have anxiety. But in fact, I do have anxiety. I was getting anxiety. It was just happening at night. And now my anxiety goes from night into day, and I'm learning to live with it. And part of living with it is mindfulness and meditation and listening to your voice, which I am so grateful for. It makes me cry. I don't know why I'm crying. Anyway, grateful. Grateful. Sorry.
That's the best part of my job, really, is hearing how the content that I'm putting out into the world is supporting people. It's the most meaningful part of what I do. Yeah. And you know, I look at my path and it's not been an easy one. You know, a lot of people, as you know, I don't know your early story, but I'm sure that there were struggles in your life and I'm sure there's things that you overcame, and people look at you and see all of your success and that's what they see. Yeah. Right. So, you know, in my life, I've lived a life with a lot of challenge, and I feel that I wish that I hadn't had to go through those hardships, but I actually feel like my path has been helpful in me doing what I do now to help people. Yeah. Because I've lived so many of those challenges. Yeah. And I have compassion for them. And I think that, you know, my hope is that, or I should just say that the most meaning that I have from this role is hearing that. So thank you for sharing that. And I'm really honored to be doing this work and supporting people like yourself.
The pauses. So you know, I'm Tamara, I think there's something about voices that are calm and soothing that always impact me. And do you have that reaction from other people? There's something about your voice and your tone and your compassion that shows through that touches you. Have you had other people do what I did, cry when they talk to you?
I have. And I hear it a lot. I hear it frequently. I think it's that so many people in this world are suffering. Yeah. And they're holding pain, and we're not taught as kids how to deal with it. We're not taught how to see our emotions and understand them and learn how to work with them. I mean, these are really, really important skills that we are not provided with. And so then we go into the world and we experience this suffering, and then we have an opportunity to meditate. And what happens is it creates a space for all of these emotions to surface. And there's something that's really unique about, you know, when you're sitting meditating and you've got your earphones on and there's someone with you that's supporting you through an emotional experience that can be difficult or emotional or moving or, you know, impactful in whatever way. And you feel that person is supporting you and that person is caring for you. That's a really kind of really unique and special space to be. And I do care. Yes. Like, I care so much. And I think that, I don't know that I could fake that. I don't know that I'm a good enough actor to fake that. I really do care. Yeah. You know, a lot of these sessions I write for me. Yeah. You know, I write for me, and I feel like there's a lot of love that goes into the content that I create. So I'm really glad to hear that people have that experience.
Well, I, you know, like, I'm a really ugly crier, and so I'm not going to be happy when I look back on this and go, Arlene, you're crying again. But, you know, and I also think that it's okay. I did something that I shouldn't have done, which was apologize. You should never apologize for feeling something, right?
Absolutely. And I think you look beautiful.
Oh, thanks. Well, you guys can all write in and tell me what you I feel beautiful right now. It doesn't really matter. You know, I think, what I will say about anyone who's listening to this podcast, and we get a lot of people listening to this podcast, and a lot of people write in to me about their own journeys of reinvention. And I think that to anyone who's listening to you and to the story of your kind of from your childhood trauma through, you know, your eating disorders and the depression and the trying to figure out how you're going to put food on your table and, you know, all of those things you went through, that you can go through that journey in life and come out of it in a position of strength. And I think that that's the story of reinvention, that it is that you need to just say out loud sometimes that you're okay. And you need to just say out loud sometimes that you have permission to try something new, because what you're doing isn't making you happy. So you need to go down a different road, and it's okay. And you exemplify that you took the twists and turns and figured out how to find a road in your life that's given you the ability to give back, which is lovely. So yeah, it's very mm-hmm. cool. Love your voice. Yeah. Love you. Love the conversation. You know, crying here still. But I hope anybody listening, go and get the Calm app, download it. It will, if you have anxiety, if you just need to take a moment away from the pandemic and what's going on in the world, listen to Tamara. She is a voice of calm, reasoning, love, compassion, everything. Tamara, anything you want to end with? Anything you want to say to everybody?
There isn't really anything specific that comes to mind. I guess just trust the path that you're on, that it will take you where you need to go. And I think also, you referencing the anxiety that you're experiencing. I don't know that there's many people who aren't experiencing anxiety right now. You know, we're living in a very different world, and I think people have less stability than they've ever had in their lives. There's so much unknowingness and so much change. And so I guess, you know, for anyone who's listening, if you're experiencing that, that it is totally normal and okay. And a lot of what causes our suffering is resisting what we're experiencing or judging it or making it wrong. And when we actually just feel like this is part of life, it actually makes sense that we're all feeling this. It becomes okay. And then we can start working with it. So I guess that's the only thing that comes to mind. And that, you know, I'm just really grateful to have had this conversation with you. This is the first podcast that I've ever done.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Podcast, Tamara. You made for them. You did an amazing job. And I thank you for sharing everything you shared. And for making this your first podcast, I am really grateful.
It's a real honor.
It seems cliche, but the most difficult portions of one's life tend to be the most crucial when it comes to pivoting towards the right path. In Tamara's case, the trauma she experienced in her early life introduced her to meditation. It not only helped to heal her in the present, but helped pave the way for her future. Today, her voice is helping millions of people that may have experienced or shared the same emotions as her. The last thing many want to hear when they are facing hardships is that everything will be okay. But detaching oneself from the everyday hustle will make that clear. Stay safe and stay human. Thanks for listening, everybody.
This podcast is made possible by the great folks at Venture Communications. Thanks to our engineers, writers, producers, and all the folks who work really hard to bring you these great stories of reinventions each and every week.